There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Season 3 of Queer I Am, the podcast, live and unscripted. I am so excited to share this with you. The podcast has been recorded over 8 weeks in front of a live audience at Arco Baleno, an inclusive queer space in the heart of Kemp Town, Brighton. I am so proud to be partnering with Arco Baleno and cannot thank Luciana, Nick and the whole team there enough for their support and generosity in the making of this season of the podcast. If you haven't been there before, please check it out. Not only do they have an incredible Maltese menu for you to explore, but they also have a range of cocktails, drinks and a regular schedule of entertainment for you to enjoy. The podcast is also being supported by their production company, Across Rainbows Productions, and filmed for YouTube. So if you didn't get to come to one of the live shows, you can find these videos at your leisure on the Across Rainbows YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe, give the videos a like, and leave any comments you may have. We also had several authors participate in the shows, and Kemp Town Bookshop were on hand to sell signed books by the authors. You can check out this beautiful bookshop in the heart of Brighton, but make sure you take your credit card because you will not leave empty-handed. The shows feature a panel of guests where we'll be talking all things queer, and an audience Q&A too, an opportunity for everyone to get involved in the conversation. In this episode, we'll be discussing queer sex. The show features author Harry Nicholas, performer Billy Gold, author Yurel Benitez-Borrego, and the chief executive of the Terence Higgins Trust, Richard Angel. I hope you enjoy the show. So whatever you're up to, this is your time to settle down, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Queer I Am. So today we're talking queer sex, and there's a lot of people here, so I'm thinking that everyone wants to have a bit of a chat about sex, which is very nice. Love this. Welcome. This is a live show over the next 5 weeks. I think we've got five more episodes, and being filmed for YouTube and released on the podcast platform as well. And it's amazing to have all of our guests here today talking about this topic. So thank you all very, very much for coming along and speaking with me. It's very exciting. And big thank you to Arco Baleno, to Nick, Luciana, the whole team here for this incredible venue as well. And of course, to Across Rainbows Productions, who are filming this for YouTube. So it'll be available in about 3 weeks' time to watch as well, which is really exciting. If you fancy another listen and another watch, I'm probably going to watch it back because you just have to, don't you? We're going to do an audience Q&A. After we've done the initial conversation, there's going to be some book sales. My lovely husband is over there fulfilling his lifelong ambition to be a bookseller. So please go and buy books. We have some amazing books over there. And of course, we have Harry's book, which isn't out yet. So you can go and get your early copy. And it's incredible. I've been reading it this week. So please go and get a copy of that. We also have some amazing leaflets for Billy's show for this week. So Billy has a new show. Do you want to talk about your show?
Yeah, I actually think I left them on the table, but I will come and do it in a minute. My show is out on Friday. It's called Praise Kink, which is quite fitting for our conversation today, isn't it? And it's across three nights. It's the 19th, 20th and 21st. So if you do want to come along, please do. It should be fun. And that's at a little theatre called The Ironworks. So it should be great.
It's going to be amazing. And yeah, so with the audience Q&A, this is a safe space. I say this every week, but we really want people to get involved and join the conversation. So if anyone has any questions, please ask the panel members when we come to that point of the show. Really happy to take questions. And I think David's got a few stored up. So, but no, we really want to keep the conversation going, and it's important that everyone joins in. So, yeah, please get involved. So I think I've done all the things I need to do. So I'm going to start with how I start every show. Billy will know this because I've interviewed her before. So if you all had to pick a song to reflect your mood right now, what would your songs be? And I'm going to start with Billy.
Oh, no.
We had this problem when we interviewed before. You couldn't think of one, could you?
No, I couldn't. And also, it was very early in the morning. That was 9 o'clock in the morning. That was middle of the night for me. I suppose, because I'm getting ready for the show and it's quite stressful, but good. So I'm kind of between the Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited, and Dolly Parton's Baby I'm Burning.
Oh, nice. Bit of Dolly, lovely.
Yeah. Nice. Did you sing that? I hope so.
So I haven't introduced the guest. I haven't done everything. No, sorry. Please welcome Billy Gold.
Hello.
I knew I'd forgotten something. Richard Angell, who is the CEO of the Terence Higgins Trust. Harry Nicholas, author of A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar, the brand new book. And up-and-coming author, Yurel Benitez-Borrego. Now we can choose our music. Sorry, folks. I knew I'd forgotten something. Richard, what would your song be?
Not how I'm feeling now, but I saw it on the telly yesterday and it's just stuck with me, is the song Sexy Boys. And it was played and it reminded me of when I first heard it on TV. And it's in that second episode of Queer as Folk where Nathan has had sex for the first time and goes back to school, and he knows that he's got gay power and he's queer and fabulous, and he's walking around seeing all these people that used to bully him thinking, I don't care because I'm gay and I've had sex and none of you have, and just going through. And it was just, I've never seen music put to TV in a better light than that. And for some reason it was on TV last night and it just took me back to watching that for a first time as a 15-year-old, having turned the colour off the TV, having turned the sound off, put the subtitles on, and watching it, ready to turn it off just in case somebody walked in. And that just feeling of that kind of excitement that Queer as Folk was bringing and the fear of being caught doing it, and just that brilliant moment. And and having had a Nathan moment myself, thinking how fabulous that was, and all these kind of so I saw it on telly yesterday, and it's just kind of stuck with me and keeps playing through in my mind.
Sexy Boys, love that. Harry?
I mean, arguably not a cultural moment, but I've in my head cha-cha-cha from Eurovision at the weekend. I cannot get out of my head. It's there. So if you see me dancing later, it's that. It's been in my head all day. I can't get it out. Please, someone help.
And how was Eurovision? Did you have
Oh, my God, it was amazing. I've not quite recovered yet. It was insane. I would, fully recommend rewatching it and going if you have the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yurel, sorry, there's just a noise. I don't know what's coming from. Yurel, what would your song be, darling?
My pussy is like a peach.
No, I'm joking.
Is that a song, or are you just saying that?
It's from Theresa May. Yeah.
No, I'm joking, but it's really a good song. I was about to say cha-cha-cha as well, but you said it already, so let's say Tattoo from Loreen or any of the... have a really good song this year, like Solo or...
Solo did go through my head a bit, but...
Yeah, and more is going to be.
See, we saw ABBA, the ABBA show on Saturday. We went and saw ABBA Voyage, which was amazing. So I've kind of had ABBA in my head. But my song today, I think, is S&M, Rihanna. Because I was feeling a bit sexy. I was like, oh yeah, this is a good tune. It's a bit. It's one of those ones you can really kind of like, I say bang to, but I meant dance. Do you know what I mean?
I mean that as well.
You could do that too. So... we are obviously talking about sex today, and I want this to be a really open discussion. Obviously, I want everyone to feel comfortable on the panel. Oh, speaking of sex, the nipples are out. So I just wanted to ask, first of all, how important you think it is for conversations like this to be had about sex? Because
I think growing up, sex was always a bit of a taboo subject in my house. No one ever talked about it. It was quite embarrassing. You know, like, you didn't really speak about it. And I think many families that I knew were kind of the same, really. And as I've got older, I've tried to be a bit more liberated and talk openly about sex. So what do you all think about that? How do you think, or how important do you think it is for us to keep this conversation going? Harry, should we start with you?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And you say that, you know, you don't really speak about sex in your family, and I didn't as well, but, you know, even less, we're talking about queer sex, and even less than that, trans sex. I think it's probably a conversation not happening. And in my book, it was really important to write about sex. I think a lot of the time it's kind of assumed that trans people don't have sex, or no one will want to have sex with you. It just isn't the case. So it's really important to include some of that in the book, good and bad, and encounters with healthcare professionals as well that didn't quite understand the sex I was having. I write quite candidly in the book about going to a pharmacy to get Plan B or the morning after pill and just being outright refused because a body like mine just couldn't possibly exist in their mind. So when we talk about sex and education, it's not just about safety, but it's also about the pleasure of sex that we can have as well, and consent and all these things. So yeah, absolutely important. I'm really pleased that we can have a space like here to talk about it, and also the different variations of queer sex as well that we can have.
Amazing. Billy?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. I grew up in a very conservative household as well, and it wasn't really talked about to a point where, and especially women's enjoyment, that just wasn't a thing in sex. So I came out really late. I came out at 27, was what I thought was late. And if you were around a TV that had a gay kiss on the TV, it got turned off. So there was never the chance to talk about, sex was never a part of the conversation in our household, because it was always a thing that was, forgive me for want of a better phrase, done to women and not involving women. So I kind of grew up in this very heteronormative way, and just assuming that what I was doing, I must have been broken then, because I wasn't enjoying it. And had I had conversations about sex, about consent, about what we wanted and advocating for ourselves, I probably would have had the resources to come out much earlier and have a talk about that, but it was never done. And I'm really glad to see that consent, especially because if you're like me and into BDSM, consent is a huge part of, you know, surprise, it's in the show. not live. But consent was never a thing. And I'm talking, even in heterosexual relationships that I was in, consent was never part of the discussion, sadly. And I'm really glad to see that that's got more of a platform now. And I'm glad to see that we're teaching it in schools. However, you know, sort of it needs to be for children to understand that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it's really hugely, hugely important for both. And I think, because I was brought up in a single parent household with just a mum, and a lot of my friends that have been brought up with a mum and a dad, there was always one parent that kind of skirted out that conversation, and it needs to be a united front. Otherwise, the weird continues. And I think just removing the weird and talking about it properly gives people power over their own bodies. That's what I think.
Interestingly, am I on?
No.
Have you flipped your thingy?
I'm on mute, sorry. this was a side question, but sex for all of you, I mean, were you all inquisitive about sex at a young age? So as kids, did you kind of like, were you intrigued by bodies and by...
Yes. Well, this is quite funny because, I mean, you know, I've always been like watching, you know, this kind of horror, so there's always kind of a sexy scene or all of that, but my auntie was living with us at some point, and when she left, she had like a DVD. It was a porn, like straight video, and it was like My Secret Fantasies. Amazing. So you can have an idea of what is the secret of the fantasies. But basically, my mom didn't want me to watch it. Of course, I was like, I don't know, 8, 9?
Yeah, understandably.
But basically, I was really curious about it. I watch it. But as well, I had so many questions, and I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to buy you a book, this kind of cartoon books, where you can see, oh, you can put your hole in your finger in here, and this is a penis, and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, but I have more questions. It's like, no, everything is in the book. And it's like,
yeah.
I don't understand.
I think parents are scared to... I was very inquisitive. I mean, I've written about this, and I read this to you today. I had a friend who was a girl who, when I was about 8 or 9, and we would always get naked together, and we loved it. We'd have a snog, we'd play with each other's bits, everything would kind of do what it needed to do, and I was really young, and we got caught, and I was in so much trouble, and I felt shame at like 8 or 9, and I think... I don't know, my parents, I mean, it was so funny, really, when I think about it now, my parents did not know how to have the conversation with me. My mum kind of talked about it, and my dad just kind of stood there in the corner kind of going, oh God, you know. But I think this is probably more common than we realise. I think kids are kind of intrigued by it, and actually 80s, 90s growing up, parents just didn't talk about it openly. So when you then come to discover sex, it's like, what do I do, and what does that look like? And then you discover porn and you think, well, this is sex, clearly. No, it's not. But it's like, do you know what I mean? It's very, very dangerous. Were you going to say something on that, Richard?
It's this sense that kind of parents contract out the sex chat, basically. Yeah. It's like, I've bought you a book that will do it for you. Yeah.
Where the babies come from.
And exactly. And almost leaving it to porn to fill in the gaps. And that's, I think, what's really destructive and really problematic. I don't particularly want to talk with my parents or my siblings about sex. That's not really... a thing. I don't want to conceive of them really thinking about it, even though I wouldn't be here without it. But and I don't really want them to talk to me about the sex I have. And I know I was absolutely obsessed when I was coming out that I wasn't going to come out as having a form of sex, but having a form of love. And I came out when I had a boyfriend, and that was the platform I wanted to tell my family about, was not that I'm gay and about my identity, but about I've got a boyfriend and I want you to accept that and go on that journey with me. And that was very, very important to me at the time. And of course, initially, the view went straight to sex. And my mum was completely obsessed about anal sex, and was clearly that was going through her mind constantly, that that's what I would be put through. Little did she know. And I'd already done it by that time. And it's thoroughly enjoyable when consensual. And lots of lube involved.
Yes.
And get your THD packs of condoms. They always come with lube. But what I think parents have a duty to do, and you saw this in Heartstoppers done so beautifully, is make that space to talk about relationships, to talk about the journey you might be on, to talk about the fact that it might be fluid, that it might change, that it might be, you might be open to new things. And then ideally have the relationship with your parents where you can be the repository for some of those conversations. And crucially, so many, particularly the women that I know, experience so much, whether it's there's a spectrum from sexual harassment to outright abuse. And of course, men experience it too. And everybody on the gender spectrum in between, that actually having your family there as a repository, if the sex you're having isn't enjoyable, the consent, which you can take away at any given moment, mm-hmm. Including during, if that doesn't go to plan, you want your parents to be the first people to be there. Because we know the most important thing, if it does go bad, is that somebody believes you. And if your own parents don't believe you, the chance that you're going to get a criminal justice system too. So I think rather than having the sex conversation with your parents, it's incumbent on parents to open the relationship conversation and to make sure that people are safe, consensual and informed about the things they want to go on to do. And the thing that can never be any good is sex with shame. The two only add up to a toxic mix. Yeah. And I think it's incumbent on parents, considering you have to have sex to have your children, that it's incumbent when you make that decision that you at that point try and demystify sex for the next generation.
I think it's parents seeing children as adults. It's making that transition, isn't it? I think that can be quite difficult for some parents to actually see you as an individual, as an adult, without, you know, that having that parental kind of figure seeing you as an equal. I think that can be quite a challenge. I agree with you. I wouldn't want to have sex conversations with my parents, but I guess it's, you're right. If there's support there and you have an open relationship with your family where you can discuss openly, that's really important and healthy, I guess. Okay, what about in terms of the media? So we have so much sex in music, adverts, films, TV, all that kind of stuff. That's kind of acceptable, but do you think, I mean, we're having this open conversation now, but do you think there is still an underlying taboo about sex in society, or do you think it's getting better? Billy?
I've had a thought about this one. So there is a taboo around sex, but it seems to be, I don't know if we've got any gay women in the room, but I've experienced it a lot where people accept lesbianism if it's pretty to them and if it's viewable by the male gaze. So I think we have so many like raunchy music videos and stuff like that. Rihanna's parading around in a thong. Janelle Monáe's just come out with a frankly fantastic new music video. And that's completely, someone's seen it, lovely. It's completely accepted and celebrated and it's great. And then you got Sam Smith that comes out and people instantly, oh no, I don't want to look at that. So it's still, I think it goes further than the taboo, and it boils down to policing bodies, basically what makes it acceptable and viewable to a, I don't want to say the words patriarchal society, but patriarchal society.
Yeah, but I think that's
so yeah, there's a huge taboo around it, and I think people are very quick to judge what they themselves don't understand. And there will always be taboos as long as we have, what's the word? Help me out here. Stuff that people don't like. You know what I mean?
Shame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There will always be taboos as long as we have shame, I think.
What do you think, Harry?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much more to add than that. I think you explained it brilliantly, in that I think there are acceptable forms of bodies and there are bodies that people deem unacceptable or, and so they're judged differently because of that. I completely agree.
I think the media are hypocrites, is the truth. They're there to kind of put a mirror up to society and point out people with power that are hypocrites, but they, of course, have power and use it completely with hypocrisy themselves. They use sex to sell and they use sex to shame and to embarrass people in other senses. So I think that's sadly part of the terrain. And in a weird way, if you accept it, you actually take away some of its power and the exceptionalism of what they do, because it actually isn't exceptional when they do it. So I think that's really important, just to kind of acknowledge that and then actually diminish the role of some of those things. You know, we've seen recent examples with how Gareth Thomas has been tried to be kind of hauled over the coals for how he treated, you know, HIV and then talking to his partner about it and all the interaction with that. People trying to sensationalise it in a way that's clearly unfair, wrong, and wishing to perpetrate stigma in others.
Yeah. I think there's a really, I watched a documentary recently about George Michael and, you know, he was absolutely, you know, slammed by the press in terms of like going cruising and having sex with people consensually, and then came back with a music video with like glitter and urinals, and everyone was kind of like, you know, felt, I think, you know, having seen a lot of those headlines, would felt a lot of shame. And then for him to come back and use that as power and queerness, I think was a really brave and courageous move for him to do. I think would have empowered a lot of other people as well to say, yeah, this is the kind of sex we have, and yeah, we like it.
I watched the documentary, which was amazing. But the interesting thing is, like, when you watch the headlines and the media coverage in America during that, after the cruising incident, I shouldn't even say incident, after he went cruising. But it's like, Have things changed that much now? I mean, if you look at some of the headlines, like we talked about Sam Smith, and we're still, people are still sensationalizing things or shaming people. I mean, that was extreme, you know, with George Michael back in, I think it was 98 or something. But I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of thing still happened in the British media today.
Isn't the exciting thing about the Sam Smith was the reaction to it, and that people who were, you know, gravitated to him, he had in minutes what George Michael took a kind of news cycle plus what it took to get a music video out to do that cycle. And I think Sam took the whole country and much of the world on that journey in a very short period of time. I think the bit where this becomes really problematic is when sex and healthcare interrelate. So we saw it in the PrEP debate, that the idea, there was this kind of perpetual, that the government shouldn't sponsor people to be promiscuous. Mm. And you see that constantly, whether it's with contraception, with PrEP, pay for condoms, etc. People are trying to controversialise the role of government being in that space. But we have a country where we decide the government should be in that space because we're collectively responsible for each other's healthcare, and that's a really important part of it. Mm. And I think you see that, and one of the things that we're conscious of as an organisation is how we go into that space responsibly and make sure we do that. And then you see the other side of it when Mpox has an outbreak and you see people who are somehow, the responsibility is to not have sex. Well, having sex is as natural as breathing.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got to kind of normalise that in part of the conversation. Some people can't go without having sex. That is part of how they live their life, affirm their well-being, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So just saying, now's the time you can't do it because there's been this outbreak, mm-hmm. is actually really problematic. Mm-hmm. And what we've got to do is give people choices and empower people to know what they're doing with their lives and their bodies rather than somehow take it away from them.
Shaming them, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just, I think it's about sexualizing. Because, like, you've been talking about Sam Smith. It's like, because it's not normative. Society is just all saying nasty things. But if you see, like, TV shows like Queer as Folk, the American one is what I watch, or Elite, you just see, like handsome people and good bodies and all of that. But you don't. I mean, now it's getting a bit better. But it looks like if you're talking about queer sex and all of that, it has to be with someone that is normative and good-looking and good body and all of that. But if not, it's just getting hate. So it's just, you know, it's something that...
It's almost like idealism, isn't it, kind of thing?
And it's not real, because first, you don't go to high school and you're just massively muscled, you know? It's like, it's not real. And you know, yes, it's entertained. Yes, but do we get a bit more real? You know, like yeah. Hadstopper and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So what does sex mean to all of you individually?
God, that's a big question, isn't it?
You don't mind, oh my gosh, answering that question.
Look at you both looking at me.
You definitely know what you know, what you think about that. Come on, we're all expecting a class now.
Class you will not get from me. I think sex, I mean, it can mean so many different things. I mean, I'm pretty positive, like, knowing what I know about a sexual expression now, I'm pretty sure that my mum is asexual, because that wasn't a conversation. She always sort of went, oh no, when we talked about anything to do with sex. I never saw her with boyfriends or anything like that. She just doesn't like sex, which is fine. It's absolutely fine. She can express intimacy in other ways. For me, it's a little bit different. I think I had a complicated relationship with sex. When I was younger and didn't really know what I was doing, you know, the Barbies lived together in the house and Ken went that way. but I didn't know. I didn't know any of that. And I didn't know how to talk about it or how to express myself. So I kind of fell into a heteronormative role, because that's what you do. And I had a very damaging relationship with sex because of that, almost sort of self-destructive, because I didn't really know what I was supposed to feel. And then when I did finally come out, and I went, oh no, that's what the problem was for all this time. And now I think that I really try and view sex as an empowerment for my own body, and not try and view it as, and I think a lot of people have a complicated relationship with sex. I enjoy sex. It's great. It's a great way to express the relationship you have with someone, or indeed yourself. But yeah, I had a complicated relationship with sex, and I think that I'm only now just viewing it as non-transactional. I know that sounds awful, but having been an ex-sex worker, you're kind of taught to see yourself as a commodity and not something that you can share with yourself or with other people in a loving way. You're taught to see it as, what can I gain from this, or how can I make them like me? And I think when you start having fulfilling relationships with people that advocate for you as well as themselves and can communicate properly what they want and need, I think it becomes much more enlightening. I mean, I'm 32. I've had more, oh my God, moments in the last 2 years than I have in my whole life. But that, I think, is important as well, not viewing sex as something you can only have lots of when you're young. Because, you know, aging is inevitable. You can't stop it. And people don't have to automatically become less sexual as they age. And I think for me, that's been a really important thing, because we don't see much of that in the media. We don't see much of, you know, people over 25 having sex on TV. And I think that is that's really important to try and sort of absorb. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. Richard? If you'd like,
I feel very lucky. I've always had a really good relationship with sex, and I have always seen it about the pleasure of my partner as much as the pleasure for myself. And I've really enjoyed that, and think I get more out of it for putting it more in for it from that. I remember I used to advise my female friends when I was young that their boyfriends should all have some gay sex at some point, because they learn that it's not just about them. That's what the other man would teach them. And some of them took me up on the advice, and improve because of it. And I think, so I've always been really lucky from that point of view, and it's why I feel able to do the job that I do and be in a sex-positive organisation trying to bring about a more sex-positive country. But I know that's not everyone's experience. But hopefully that means I can open up that conversation for other people about what it could be and what we can start with new conversations about what it could be.
Yeah, absolutely. Harry?
Yeah, sex has been really important for my sense of identity, I think. So I understood myself when I was younger as a lesbian and then a questioning person and then now a gay man. So having those different sexual experiences with different people and bodies have meant that it's kind of helped me understand who I am and what I like and don't like. And I think as well, like more recently, going to gay spaces, because I never felt like I was enough as a trans man. I, in gay spaces specifically, always sort of use sex as a way of sort of proving my gayness or queerness. And I think, yeah, battled a little bit with sex addiction and like constantly being on the apps and trying to always find like the next shag or whatever, because it would like fuel my own sense of self, which I think ultimately is a battle that you have to face. I think it's something that not just trans men, but like a lot of gay men in general, come to terms with. And I remember reading Matthew Todd's Straitjacket, and he spoke about it very candidly in there, and actually found very affirming. Like, ah, this is what's happening to me. I'm using it to feel like I'm enough, or you know, to battle the shame or whatever it might be. But for me, sex has taken loads of different types of, like, you know, it's gone from, you know, two vaginas or a penis and a vagina, or like two penises, whatever it might be, or twosomes, threesomes, however many sums, whatever. It's never just been one thing. And sexual health as well has been a big part of that in terms of going to a sexual health clinic and going, this is the type of sex that I have. And them often just looking like completely bemused by it. So it's been, yeah, massively important for all kinds of different reasons.
Amazing.
Well, for me, it's funny because for me, when I was like very young, very teenager, I'm still young, you know, but like a teenager, was penetration. It's like, if you don't have penetration, you don't have sex. It's like, it's what you learn in the TV shows and all of that. It's just about penetration. But with the time, I'm learning that actually it's not that important if you are top or you are a bottom. It's like, first thing on Grindr, top or bottom? Hello, how are you? This is my name. You know, do I fancy you? It's like, no. Or even the drag queens, you know, it's something that I really hate, and think we discussed about, yeah, this, being anywhere, the old, most likely the old one saying, oh, are you top or bottom? It's like, it's not your fucking business, you know? And even though if it's a trans person, like, even though, why are you asking that? It's rude, you know? But now with the time, I learned that sex is not about penetration, it's about intimacy, is about love. It's, you know, you can have a chat with someone random, yeah, and you can enjoy. But I feel like when you have a moment like kisses or, you know, intimacy, closeness, it can be sex as well. You don't need to even, you know,
get it out.
get it out, you know. And it's there's a lot of ways to understanding sex. It's not just oral or you know, a wonk. No, it's even a kiss and a really nice intimate affection. Moment, affection, it can be sex, you know, sex can be whatever you want.
I think what it's really interesting that some of the comments here, and I think something that I've written down here is about what I feel is there is a bit of a hierarchy in the gay community. And I don't know if it's prevalent in the lesbian community, but in the gay community, I definitely think it's there. And it's very much like, you know, you see it on Grindr, top or bottom, mass or mass, no femmes, da 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 da. And it's, I don't know, I feel like people are really missing an opportunity to have really amazing sex with people and connect with people just on a superficial basis. There's something going on with the speaker. Hopefully it won't blow, we'll be fine. Blow being the operative word. But do you all feel that? I mean, do you feel there is a hierarchy? Have, from your experiences of being on apps or just interacting in the community, do you think that is really prevalent? And actually, is that an issue?
Yes. I mean, you just go on Grindr, it's like, oh, yes, I want to top you all the time. It's just about all penetration. Most of the time it's penetration. There is more. Even go for a coffee, go for a drink. Know me a bit more what I like, but you just want penetration. Come and go.
Yeah.
It's not about that, mm-hmm. You know? We have to learn more about our bodies and what we like each other. You can't just randomly meet someone and say, okay, what do you like? Because you need a bit of, you know, intimacy with a person and talk about that. Say, yeah, I like in this way and all of that, but it's just something quick. You might not,
I guess, enjoy. You can hook up with people, but
it's
the reality
the
is the level of that intimacy or feeling comfortable with that person is probably going to be quite different compared to if you know someone. I was reading your book last night and your experiences of downloading the Grindr app and the messages and how overwhelming it was. And, you know, I've used Grindr before and I completely got that. I was like, you know, it's first of all, I find it exhausting. I mean, it's just, it's one of those apps where it's just like, ping, ping, ping. Not that I get pinged that much, love it, but you know. But when, if I did get pinged, it would ping, 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 ping. And then it's like all those kind of conversations and, you know, and it's I find it very toxic. I mean, do you want to talk about your experience with kind of using it for the first
time? Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you're saying here is there's a chapter in my book about Grindr and downloading it for the first time and sort of exploring gayness from like the safety of my bed sheets almost and being able to sort of explore that way. But for me, I actually found like growing up as a girl, I always found that everyone was like, oh, your first time has to be really special with the right person. And I actually found it really affirming as a gay guy just for how to go on Grindr and have a shag, like, and find it very transactional. I found that very, I don't know, I quite liked that. And I do quite like transactional sex for that. I know it has its toxicity and it has its problems. And absolutely, we should be having better conversations. But I also acknowledge that there's a reason why we go on these apps and have them still on our phones, so that there's a part of us that likes it or finds it sexy. And, you know, I go to saunas. I'm in a group chat with other trans men that go to saunas and, like, have anonymous sex. So there's still something there that we want and that we need, that I still find really hot, even though we should also be having a balance of sex that is, you know, obviously consensual, but also has, you know, the other person at its heart. But I think there's a balance to be had. Like the sex that I'm going to have with a hookup is not the same sex that I'm going to have with my boyfriend, right? Yeah. Like, so it's very nuanced. It's not just a case of, I think there's one thing that fits all. But this chapter that you're saying is, yeah, it was very overwhelming to download a gay app. And there's kind of a whole language to it that I'd never known before. Like, what does top and bottom mean? And where do I fit into it as a guy with a pussy? Like, I double bottom? Like, I don't really know that that works. So there was a whole new language and words and tribes, as they're referred to on there or whatever. And it was a whole new world. But I also really liked that. I found that very affirming for my gender and sexuality as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important when you talk about like going to saunas and hookups. And there is no shame in any of that. You know, it's everyone should be free to live the life they want to live sexually and otherwise. But I think it's, for me, it's just about how we can make those experiences nicer. Like sometimes it can, I know maybe I'm, I don't know, it's cloud nine, but it, you know, like it, I don't know, Grindr for me was just very toxic.
It can be quite depersonalizing, can't it? And dehumanizing. I suppose often the question after the kind of top or bottom question, which in itself kind of stratifies people unnecessarily, is, are you clean? And that kind of re-stigmatizing of HIV and STIs, and this idea that somehow you've done something bad if you're on an app and you've had gonorrhea or chlamydia or, God forbid, are living with HIV. I was like, I think this might have been transmitted by the thing you're looking for today. Like, yeah. And if we just change that view that somehow you're the bad person for transmitting, it's like, we're all responsible for our sexual health.
Absolutely.
We all can go into this space knowingly. And asking that question, you know, have you tested recently, is a much nicer way in than are you clean, and how pejorative that is and how weighted that is as a term. And you know, I'd much rather have sex with somebody who is in charge of their sexual health and knows what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. And of course, the great thing about how HIV has changed over 40 years is that people living with HIV who take the medication can't pass it on. So the safest person you can have sex with if you're worried about HIV transmission is somebody who's living with HIV, knows their status, and takes their medication. Mm-hmm. You know, the sex that you don't have to worry about. That's the sex that you can kind of lay back and enjoy, or whatever way you end up doing it. And you go for it. And then everything short of that is about other people who manage their sexual health in different ways.
Absolutely.
And I think just, if I could change one thing about those apps, is that are you clean comment, and everything that goes from that, and how because it then, I think, adds into the transactional relationship power.
Yeah.
The idea that somehow if you were to be unclean, you've got a very different power. It's such a value judgment. And I think, yeah, it really adds to the transaction, that element of power. And that's worrying, I think.
Yeah, completely. Billy, is there an equivalent app for gay women? So
it's a bit different in the lesbian community. I'm just angry we don't have animals because you guys have bears and otters and things. And what have we got? Squirrels or something. Squirrel would be a good one, I think.
Or mermaids.
I think I'd identify as a squirrel. What, sorry?
Mermaids.
Oh, that's nice. No, I think it is a bit different in lesbian communities. We tend to chat a lot, to be honest. We do, and we don't have... one thing I do wish that we had was a hookup app. We don't really have one. We have Hinge, or we have, you know, Her, and it's all very talky apps. We don't have an app where you can just meet someone for the night, have a really lovely exchange, and then go back to your lives. And I think that's something we should have as women. Or lesbians.
Is that just as common in the lesbian community as it is in the gay community in terms of hooking up, you know, meeting people, kind of?
Yeah, we just don't have an app for it.
Okay.
I prefer to meet people in the flesh because, you know, I'm that sort of chick, really. But I do go to kink meetups, which is, I've never found a group of people so nice and so, you know, wanting to get to know who you are and what you're about, because we like brains. So it doesn't really matter who I'm talking to. If they've got a nice brain, I want to lick it. No, we don't have a hookup app, unless I've not found it and you're not all telling me.
Anyone know?
No, we don't. Let's make one. I agree.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey. I've got quite a, I think it's quite funny. I had a very British experience at the sauna. So I hadn't been to one before, and I can't believe I'm telling this, but anyway, I hadn't been to one before, and I kind of looked around, and I was quite impressed. There was Pringles and water and food if you got hungry. I thought, this is very nice. I like
which sauna was this? Of Pringles?
It's in Hove. It's yeah. Anyway,
it's in Hove.
It's in Hove. Hove, actually. And like I went upstairs, and there was this guy completely starkers enjoying a bit of porn, having a wank, and I was like, oh, okay, this is nice. And he was very gifted. And I, you know, when you look a couple of times and you're like, oh, wow, that's, you know. So he kind of gave me a nod and I went, oh, no, thank you very much, but it's very nice. I haven't been back. I don't think it's my place. But, you know, it was one of those experiences where you just kind of walk out and go, why?
You know, last time that I went to a sauna, I ended up watching Glee at 2 a.m. So it was, I almost have a panic attack and there was no bus and it was raining. So, yes.
And wasn't someone watching you? Eh? Like, someone watching you having a wank while you're watching Glee?
Was that... No, it was someone pass out.
Oh.
I think maybe from Poppers.
Oh my goodness, amazing. So I want to talk about porn as well. I'm kind of getting onto all the nitty-gritty here, but I think it's good. So I watch porn. I like porn. I like OnlyFans, I like Twitter. Twitter's like the biggest porn site in the world. Basically, you know, I typed in Madonna, 5 men came up all doing like a train of sex. So, you know, the random things you can get when you go into Twitter. But I, when I grew up, I really felt a sense of shame. And I think I probably learned a lot about, I learned a lot about sex. I didn't, because it was all a bit false. But that was my kind of sex education as a young queer person. There was nothing out there for me to kind of explore and understand, I guess. And I guess sex work is so much more kind of everyday mainstream now. Like, you've got so many people on OnlyFans and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of feel like the shame maybe is going, maybe from what it was like 20 years ago, but I might be wrong. So what are your thoughts on porn? And do you think that we are getting into more of a healthier place with it? Or is there still kind of work to do? And Billy...
I've got an answer for that one.
Yeah.
So I've watched and made porn. I think porn, so many people learn from porn, which is kind of unfortunate, because people tend to learn from porn that is mass produced and kind of bashed out quickly, for want of a better phrase. And it teaches people such stupid and fanciful ideas, like you can just walk into someone's house and they're ready and able to have sex with you, which is not the case for anybody. I don't care who you are, that's not the case. And I think for me, I tend to watch ethical porn, so I find an OnlyFans creator that I like, I pay the lovely lady the money, and then I watch the porn. I don't particularly like going to mainstream porn accounts, because unfortunately things do live in there, like revenge porn, so people may not know that they're on there. There are quite a few videos of me floating about on the internet somewhere, I'm very sure. I turned to making porn when I was very poor, so it was a necessity, which means it wasn't exactly the best experience. And I think that's one thing to think about when you are viewing porn, is to go to an ethical creator that enjoys their job. Maybe not go to cam sites. that's where I was. And I spoke to a lot of women. It's not like you do your job and you don't speak to anyone else who does it. We have a chat room because we're talking about you. But we all sort of shared the same views. It can be exhausting, but it can also be very fulfilling. You get to explore things doing sex work that you wouldn't normally do. Sometimes you find things out about yourself. I certainly did. Got into sploshing. Do you know what that is? So I think, yeah, porn is both a good thing and a very, very cursed thing. I will answer.
You're gonna tell us.
I will, yeah.
thank you.
So splashing is the act of using food or mess during sex. So chucking baked beans at each other and things like that. But that can be very fun. And I think that sort of roams over into the kink world, which isn't always about touching each other's bodies and having penetrative sex. Sometimes it's a completely different thing. You've got people who are into all sorts. And I think when you do learn, start to learn and explore in the porn world, you might stumble onto some weird stuff, or you might sort of stumble into a thing and you go, oh, I couldn't actually, what is that? And then you learn things about yourself, and then off you go with it. So I think it's both lovely and very cursed at the same time.
Absolutely.
Well, I have to say, since I was a teenager, I've been very naughty, you know, and I remember, you know, recording myself with my ex and you know, having sex and all of that. And the most like far thing that I did was being on Cam4. Does anyone know Cam4? I bet. Yeah. Yes. But yes, I did a couple of times, and I was like, well, I'm just being here like 3 hours wonking and just got like $10. It's like, it's not worth it, you know. But it's about what you say. If it's ethical and people do it because they want and it's real, then okay. But if you just see the like this website is not real and you can just see massive cocks and all that. That's not real. You have to have a bit of everything because it's not all about the size of the penis or, you know, there is more things, more bodies. You have to show more. Yeah, so completely. I don't know if I explain myself.
No, I think completely, yeah. And I think I like the whole ethical thing that you mentioned. But I think there's a lot of queer baiting as well. I've seen a lot of... So like on Instagram now, there is a lot of straight guys, I think.
Yes.
Like, I don't know, wearing no pants and conveniently skipping in their garden and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, check out my OnlyFans. And there are people on... And I know this because I've been stung because one of them was quite fit. And I thought, well, I'll just have a little look. And it was... It's not... There's not sex. It's just... They are literally just teasing. And it's... They're then charging... 12 quid a time. And I don't know, it's, I know everyone's got to make money or whatever, but is that just take, I kind of feel like if you're going to interact and like try and attract a queer audience, actually have the sex.
Well,
I mean, literally there's this guy, he was having sex with another guy wearing a strap on and he had a penis. So they're happy to do that to make money because of queer baiting and then charging £25 a video. But not actually willing to go through with it. And
I also think it devalues sex work.
Yeah, it does.
But
finish that point.
I was just going to say, it's a job. It's a very hard job. So if you are devaluing sex work, then it's, then kind of shame on you, really, because it's there's people that put a lot of time, effort, energy into their marketing, into their social media, into their fan base. It's a long ass job. I was crap at it, but
One of these guys has 1 million followers on Twitter. So there are people looking at this.
But they're voluntary followers. They've not done... and if there's a pattern to their behaviour, then their followers know what they're doing, right? I think, isn't it all about being informed and consent and just people knowing what's happening?
But it's working, though, isn't it? What they're doing is working. They're attracting 1 million people into it. And then potentially they're going on to OnlyFans and then they're getting kind of robbed from not real content, I guess.
But... The thing is, why straight people, like straight men, let's talk about straight men, okay? They throw so much hate to the queer community and then they need to pretend that they're having sex with another man to get money from them. It's like, it's a bit hypocritical and there's a lot of straight guys that are doing it in OnlyFans. They're teasing, like you said, and then you subscribe and they're not even fagging or nothing. They're just playing around.
Yeah.
So why?
Are they the same men that are doing those two things? There are clearly straight men that are homophobic in their nature.
Yeah.
And then there are men that are being exploratory, whether they're doing it for money or for entertainment or for their self-esteem or all the other things. I just think I don't think it's helpful to project anything onto that experience either. Like, they're doing it for the reasons they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this queer baiting is really troubling, the way that Harry gets treated, the way poor Kit got treated for being not out on Heartstoppers and being kind of almost like forced into this place. Like, let people like take their journeys, and some people have got a really windy road and that's fine. And I think they'll get there. And I think just the more power we put on these things, the more it can be destructive. And the other way through, you know, ultimately the way the market works is you pay once, you don't like it, you don't pay again.
Well, absolutely.
Like, you know, if you have a bad coffee somewhere, you don't go to the same coffee shop. And it'll be the same with this. And, you know, I regret the kind of commodification of people's bodies and humanity in that sense. But it's the oldest job that's ever existed.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as long as people aren't duping their followers, but I think very quickly you could work it out.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have a very different relationship, I think, to porn, because I came to porn very late. I was 18, 19. I think my version of porn when I was growing up was like watching Skins on YouTube, like series one, episode 9, or whatever, in like 10 minute chunks. So not quite the same, but when I was searching for porn, I was looking to find bodies and people like me, and I couldn't find them. I couldn't find any trans men actually that were doing porn at that point. I mean, now it seems to be a lot more, there seems to be a lot more people doing it for sure. I think FTM, like female to male as a porn category, has grown exponentially for whatever reason in the last couple of years. But I look to find people and bodies that might have the same as me. And I couldn't find any. I found that really strange because the whole saying is like, oh, well, there's everything. You know, if you search a porn, there'll be anything. And actually, there wasn't anything. So I found that really, really strange. So it's been interesting to see the rise of that specifically. And I would say that when you search for like trans in, you know, whatever porn site we're using, often it would be trans women that were coming up. And I think that speaks to trans misogyny and misogyny in general and patriarchy. But I think, yeah, trans men have been lost in that a little. Yeah,
absolutely. In terms of, I guess, and it's really interesting what we've all been talking about, and you talking about the situation, actually people will watch it once. If they don't like it, they can move on. What about, I guess, going back to like sex education, and we talked about this earlier, you know, I didn't have queer sex education at school. I'm not sure how different the syllabus is now. I think obviously we can talk more openly about queer relationships in schools because Section 28 has been eradicated, but are we providing the right level of sex education? And I think a lot of teenagers will watch porn, or they will look at Instagram and then see those bodies and those six packs and those chisel bodies or big breasts or whatever it might be. And that's what I need to aspire to. I mean, you can already see a trend of 20-somethings that have Botox or get their lips done. Or there's such I know it's a bit of a minefield and it may be going off topic a bit, but these things are really influential. So how do we keep that balance of making sure that people get the right education and that things like false OnlyFans or porn or social media isn't causing an issue later down the line? Because that troubles me, I guess. I think it's kind of getting worse than when I was a kid. So what do you all think about that?
I think sex education is always framed by a group of people as somehow it's like risky, the opportunity of adults to talk to children, they're going to do something awful and encourage them to do something utterly terrible. And we've seen examples of irresponsible politicians extrapolating stuff and projecting that into the classroom and suggesting that things might be done age inappropriate or whatever that might be. I think there's a lot of governance over this and people trying to do it. But the risk is the other way, is not knowing about sex, about bodies, about change and what's coming. And we need to turn that dial, that not educating people, because the only way you have true power in that sexual relationship is by knowing your own body, what you enjoy, where things are, what you might want to do with somebody else, and be able to see that through, and knowing you have an absolute right to say no at any point, including during. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really important thing to come back to. So we've got to turn the dial on that, and regrettably the government are doing this review. We've got to turn that into an opportunity, mm-hmm. because the absence of sex education is why actually there's lots of toxic relationships, power dynamics, and we've got to change that. And I think starting in the classroom is no bad place to do
it. Yeah, absolutely.
And
Well, I'm the most younger one in here, and
all right.
Yes, I am. like in 2016, I was in the high school. I remember, there was like a queer place. They came to the high school and they did like a kind of sex education. It was a kind of basic, just like, well, you know how to put a condom and all of this. Like, well, I know all of this already, but I've seen that, you know, I'm the new generation. I've seen already that happening, so I bet it's happening. But I bet as well you need more questions, and as well talk about the risk, just not about, oh, you can get pregnant, as well, you know, talk about, you know, you can get gonorrhea. You need to talk about the prep as well. It's we are having TV shows now talking about that, but we still talk about more, because if you don't know how you are going to prevent yourself from that, or even from the abusive, from the toxic relationship, or you know, consent, all of that is really important. It's just about how to put a condom.
Yeah.
You know that they are going to do a air balloon with that.
Yes.
We do need more of that, however, because if you have a bad experience with condoms the first time you use condoms, you are very unlikely to ever use them again.
Yeah.
So if you've got the wrong size, wrong shape, you put it on the wrong way around.
Yeah.
If it fails, and particularly if your erection fails along the condom thing, men will not try again in lots of senses. And that's is a problem for people going forward. And so we, you know, condoms are a thing that give people choice and power in the relationship and allows people A avenue, PrEP and other things are other ways, long-term contraception, whatever, but allow people to have power in their sexual relationships. And so it's really important. So it's often dismissed, this idea of trying on a condom or giving away condoms to younger people, but it's actually really important. And we have programs all around the country. We get out sample packs, have different sizes in it, some latex, some non-latex, crucially include lube in the packs, as well as information about PrEP and other things. So people can have that and they can try it out. And obviously we call it a posh wank, encourage people to have many a posh wank in their younger years and throughout their lives. And it's a really important way of you learning your body and learning some of the limits. And I think that's a really important thing to do. And because there is PrEP for some people, doesn't mean that that works for everybody as a form of HIV transmission prevention. But equally, condoms are a useful way of preventing other STIs and other things. So I think it's just really important. And letting people explore is the most interesting thing, I think, and most important thing.
Now, is this me just being a bit daft here, but different sizes and all that kind of stuff, was that a thing 20 years ago? Because I don't remember going into a shop and seeing different sizes and different options. It, like, you went to Boots, there was like condoms, it was like Durex, that was kind of it. And then, I don't know.
Not just different sizes, but also different colours. So you might have seen a brand called Rome that's come out, which has condoms in different shades of your skin colour to allow people to have sex in a way that's very natural to them and reflective of their race and their physical attributes in a way that can be part of that relationship. But it's really important going forward. Whether it was in the... I mean, clearly, penises have always come in different sizes.
Yeah.
But I think they have existed in different sizes for a very long time. But I think we've got to try and normalise that. And there is a scheme across the country called C cards, where you can get a card and you can go to a number of pharmacists and other places. There's loads of them in Brighton and other places around the country. And you show this card and you can get a sample pack which has the different sizes in. And when you know what your size is, you can kind of indicate that you're looking for
those ones,
particular size or whatever, and a loop pack and whatever that goes with it. And so, and the hope is our colleagues at Brooke have done a partnership with Rome about rolling out these different coloured condoms. I think that's really important for people of colour to see themselves in those sexual moments and not have to be in a kind of white-centric sex world. I think that's really important.
Absolutely.
So the thing about condoms is really interesting, actually, and the fact that maybe we should let, you know, high schoolers and stuff play with condoms, because, I mean, my first sexual experience with a man went horribly because he didn't know how to use it. So we just were idiots and went, oh, it'll be all right. Spoiler alert, it isn't. You know, and I think it's really important to get people used to condoms. Everyone, in fact. I didn't know when I came out that I had to use them on sex toys. And I was like, what, can't I just wash? No. And I think it's really important to educate everyone about that sort of thing and not limit it to gay men or heterosexual couples. Like, everyone should be aware of barrier methods during sex, because it's important.
Absolutely.
When I... was younger and at school, we sort of had that traditional thing of having condoms and you'll have, you know, the whatever. So, you know, we'd mess about with that and successfully put the condom on, whatever. And then I had a condom in my pocket and my teachers asked me to turn my pockets out, and then I got a detention for having a condom in my pocket. So it's kind of like, you know, you'll have the sex education tick box, but actually then having sex or like anything like that. And I went to an all-girls school, so it's absolutely, completely, you know... unfathomable. They used to go around with like meter sticks asking you to like stay away from the boys from the boys' school, which was bizarre. But it sort of stays with me to that day, that kind of like idea of shaming. So it's bizarre, but I would like to see this idea of sex education be extended. It's not just for children or for young people. I think sex education should be expanded for a whole generation of people who didn't have the right sex education when they were younger. Like, you know, I spoke at the top of the show about going into a pharmacy and being denied treatment because they just didn't see that a body like mine existed. You know, that's the kind of thing we need to be changing across all healthcare professions and education about all kinds of bodies. Now we have this language.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's a real change that I think needs to happen. Do you think there's any other changes within the community generally that need to advance in any way or need to make any changes when it comes to sex within the queer community? Is there anything that's kind of going on or you're hearing about that you think this just isn't healthy or isn't right, or we need to support people or make that change? What do you think?
Well, first of all, the shaming. not been shaming people if they send you pictures on Grindr or all of that, and being sharing that picture with more people and making love of them, you know? First of all, starting from that, most of all, respect. And I don't know. what was the question?
Changes, like advancements in the queer community when it comes to sex.
A bit more of respect, you know, and be a bit more open to be more human, not just like a, you know, like a machine, you know, like oh yes, I want you to fuck you, yeah, that's it, fuck. Oh no, just, you know, I've been sucking you off, give me a kiss, give me a cuddle, you know, not just like, oh yeah, you have the door in there.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Why
human
it's
connection.
Like, I don't understand. I think, you know, the closeness of the relationships, I think it should be more important. Even though if you're not going to see that person again, just being kind, you know, because you are already doing something that you are exposing yourself. Because sex is something that you're not doing, like, with your mom or with your dad. Maybe in some cases, I don't know. But, yeah, it's a bit extreme, yeah, sorry.
It's a vulnerability, I guess, isn't it? So it's like, be vulnerable.
Be kind. Because if not, you feel vulnerable and you feel ashamed. And then that's when it starts the toxic circle of sex on Grindr and being choosing and you want to be the chosen one. And, oh no, I don't want to be with you. And you just feel invalidated for their own community. So, yes, if you don't have a normative body. So, yeah. That's, I don't know if I explain myself.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, absolutely. Billy?
See, I reckon with the rise of, I don't know if anyone's on TikTok, but with the rise of TikTok and so many people, I mean, you're getting so much information in your eyeballs within a minute. It's crazy. But what I've seen is there seems to be, with the younger generation coming through, a shaming of people that are, and I say this as a BDSM person in a polyamorous relationship, there's a shaming of people who aren't polyamorous and aren't into BDSM. Like, let people have a shag and be married. Like, it's just, do you know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, but you've got to respect our views. Respect theirs then. Because, you know, there's lots of people who experience relationships in different ways. Maybe someone doesn't want to have five girlfriends. There's a lot of paperwork. You know, maybe someone wants to just go home, watch telly, have a nice shag and go to bed. Some people want to be hung from a chandelier. You can't judge
there's
anyone.
There's room for all of it, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, and there's people, you know, oh, you're in a monogamous relationship. Yeah, and? Like, it just doesn't seem, it seems to have gone like, it's gone so far the other way that now we're judging people from both sides and it's just insane.
And it's hard, you know, me and my husband tried openness for a bit. It's hard work. It's like,
oh my God.
It's, I don't know. Like, sometimes you just want to have a nice bit of food in front of the telly and.
Exactly. And I just think.
And read a book and, you know, yeah. It's.
I think building on what you said about respect, it is really about respecting what people do. And I also think that there is a huge divide in the queer community between, and I'm going to speak carefully here, people who have sex with same gender and people like gay people and lesbian people, there seems to be this animosity to lesbians that has never quite gone away. I experienced it with my first ever girlfriend, with a very good friend of ours stood there, and a gay man. We kissed and he went, and I just find it horrendous how parts of the queer community can turn on other parts of the queer community. Like, we're all in the same boat. It, don't be doing gag faces or saying, that's disgusting. You know, if people hear the word vagina, they balk at it. I'm not doing that about a penis. No. You know, it's ridiculous. And I think the divides within the queer community could really do with being bulldozed a little bit.
We need
that's
to come
what
together
I think.
More, don't we?
Exactly.
We have each other's backs. Absolutely. Mm. What do you think, Richard?
I think sex is changing, and I think some of the it being an identity is actually going away for some people. That whether they who they have sex with doesn't necessarily isn't linked to the things that I would associate with being gay and going to the theatre and being fabulous and loving Eurovision as kind of queer Christmas. And we're seeing, you know, we obviously see it this kind of the lens through the kind of healthcare lens of STIs or whatever, but the and there's a couple of weeks time, big shot, there's an outbreak of syphilis, and it's changing where the syphilis is moving around, and it is moving into particularly straight women. And part of that is that they're having sex with different people, and some of it is that they're still having sex with men, but they're having sex with men who are queer and gay, and that, and people are just being more fluid about all of those things. And I just think that's a really welcome thing, that people are open to love and expressions of relationships and just the kind of pure pleasure element of it, but open to it with more people and doing it in a way that is really positive and affirming for them and hopefully the other person that they're doing it with. So I think there's something that's really changing, and I think we've got to be really careful that while there's this kind of appalling attack on the trans community, our identity as queer people is something that we're so wedded to because it's part of our fight back. It's part of our affirmation that we're here and visible and seen. And I think that we still got to, while doing that, be open to the fact that queer is a real spectrum that includes some people who are in and out on the closet on a daily basis that might never come out, that might just try something. And I think that's something we've got to be really open to and welcome to, that while we fight for our rights in some cases, other people are just going about their lives, and there's room for both of those things with respect at all times.
And there's no one set version of someone, is there, as well? You know, there's a spectrum of sexuality, gender identity, you know, how we present ourselves as queer people. I think that, you know, it would be quite boring if everyone was the same. But I think I definitely feel that sometimes it's, I don't know, you can go to a queer pub and it can be, you know, oh, you've got your nails painted, or you've got, you know, and it's, again, it's very, people are very much in their boxes sometimes. And for me, I want to kind of straddle those boxes, I guess. And, you know, and...
Bet you do.
Yeah, I do, yeah. But encourage others to do the same as well, because I wonder sometimes, is it just fear? Maybe some people don't want to paint the nails or don't want to straddle the boxes, whatever. But actually, sometimes, is it just fear? Is it just, I'm safer here right now? But I think we all change over time, don't we? We can't stay the same. It's impossible. What do you think, Harry?
Yeah, there's quite a lot I would change about, just sex in queer spaces. Well, sex and queerness in general. I think, you know, that's everything from, I was speaking to one of my friends earlier about being a trans guy in saunas, for example, and it's kind of like, oh, well, you have a trans policy and that's kind of where it finishes. And that's not the case. You know, I feel fearful every time I go into spaces because the clients may be different. I don't know whether, you know, I'll be kicked out and whether they would have my back about being in there or not. Actually, it's quite, in terms of like talking about queer people turning on each other, it's quite an appropriate time to have a book called A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar, because it's about straddling those two things at the same time. And I there's a whole chapter in the book about experiencing an overhearing a conversation in a gay bar with a group of gay men who were talking about which one was a gold star gay or which one was a platinum gay. And for those who may not be aware, a gold star gay in their eyes is someone who's never had sex with a woman, or a platinum gay has never had had a cesarean or whatever. So like, I don't know what I would be, but but it's, I found that really repulsive, that idea of like a hierarchical gayness, and that somehow we were more gay than others. And I think there's a real toxicity to that. So there was a lot of change in the style with sex education, but also just this embedded, ingrained idea of, yeah, queer people turning each other because we're different, and you're all different, but we have at our heart, you know, solidarity, and we have queerness, and we have otherness. So I think that some, you know, for me, gender and sexuality can never be something that is separated. You know, in order to have sexuality, you need to understand gender, and vice versa. So
Well, I used to work in a sauna in here. I'm not going to say the name. I think it's pretty obvious.
There's only two.
So you know which one I'm meaning. And the owner basically said that if you don't have the top surgery, you cannot come in. So it's like a fucking transphobic bitch. So it's like, why there is still like this space is just for gay men or bisexual men, but not for trans people? Why? When you need to have certainly surgeries to feel in and enjoy the freedom of the sex. It's something that I don't understand. I left that place. It was fucking awful, because you can tell I don't. It doesn't go with my ethics to work in a place like that.
Yeah.
You know, you can enjoy the sex, but if you don't allow more people to be, why you just focus on, oh, you need a penis. You need that. It's not about having a penis. There is a lot of more of a spectrum, just that. Mm-hmm. Why?
Mm-hmm. I think hopefully, you know, with conversations like this and with everyone keeping the conversation going and so much great literature that's coming out, you know, wonderful book that's going to be on sale in a few minutes. You know, I think it's, you know, hopefully we educate people and we keep the conversation going and people do change opinion. I think, you know, those kind of situations are very narrow-minded. But I think, you know, people have to have a duty to educate themselves and make changes. But hopefully with the right literature, the right podcasts, the right TV programs, films, you start to see change. And that's, I think we are starting to in some ways, but I think there's still a hell of a way to go.
It's still about the money, because if there is still people, I mean, don't get me wrong, you can go, but if there is, it's not going to be a change if the same people is going and this is still paying money, they're still receiving money. But, you know, they are not going to make any change if you don't think, okay, let's include more people. And it's just about the money. It's not about the liberty. It's
inclusivity,
just,
yeah.
Yes, it's just, yes, only men. Mm-hmm. That says everything.
Yeah.
There's almost like a rite of passage thing. I found being in relationship with people where they've had a bad coming out experience, they almost want that for somebody else, that's the kind of, it's what you have to go through to be really gay and then pass on that sense of toxicity. And I wouldn't want that for anyone to have a bad coming out experience. And I think we've all got a duty to kind of make that as positive as possible for everyone in the queer community and just end that sense of we can stop that cycle and we all have a role to play in that. And I think we could do something really positive
we
to do that.
We all need to join read the conversation. Harry's book. Yes, read books, join conversations. I want to finish before we have a break with a question to you, Richard. Or not really a question, but I guess... an education piece maybe. So I think a lot of people in this room will know about all the great work that the Terence Higgins Trust does. And obviously your mission to 2030 to have no new cases of HIV in the UK. But medical advancement over the last however many years has just been, I mean, it's taken us so much further forward. So do you want to talk about all the good work that the Terence Higgins Trust does and kind of how people can find out more information?
So I think it's really important to reflect that when Terry Higgins was the first named person to die of an AIDS-related illness, there wasn't even a test. We didn't know what the virus was. It had no name. And all these years later, we have the most amazing care, and crucially, we have the most phenomenal treatment. And that treatment, that if you take it regularly and as prescribed, means that you can get what's known as an undetectable viral load. So there's not enough HIV in your system to pass it on to somebody. And we know, no ifs, no buts, that if you're taking your treatment, you can't pass it on. And from a study that had 2 million acts of condomless sex, you cannot pass on the HIV virus if you're taking your medication. And I think that's really important, really empowering people living with HIV, the people who want to have sex with people living with HIV. And it's really important, I think, to the kind of burden that HIV has had, whether it's on the queer community, people from Black African diaspora, or people more generally that have disproportionately experienced HIV. I think that's really important that we all know that and share that. And the one thing you can pass on is that message that people living with HIV can't pass it on. Because of that, because of the drug PrEP, that means that somebody negative can take the drug and not acquire HIV. Because of PEP, which is kind of something you can take in 72 hours if you've been exposed to HIV, because of condoms and because of regular testing, we have all the tools necessary to stop the onward transmission of the virus. And not only could we do that, we could do it by 2030. If we do it, we could be one of the first countries in the world to do it. It'd actually be the first country in the world to do it. And if we've done it, it's the first time we've stopped the onward transmission of a virus without a vaccine and without a cure. And that gets me out of bed every day and makes me really excited to go to work, to share our message, to raise funds, to support Mark Tweed and his colleagues here in Brighton who do an amazing job helping people get access to PrEP and condoms, information, testing, because it's such an exciting generational thing to be part of. You know, HIV took away a generation of gay men, has impacted globally on those who most experience health inequalities, and we have it in our gift to change that. And some of the steps we can take are so small. So here in Brighton, everyone who goes to A&E and has a blood test will automatically get a test for HIV, and they're adding hepatitis B and C. And in doing so, and having done this just in four cities, we found 500 additional people living with HIV, been diagnosed, who would previously have gone undiagnosed and not taken their treatment. That is lives that we have literally saved, and onward transmission that we have prevented in doing so. So it's a really exciting time to work in HIV. And that's a very odd thing, I think, for lots of people to hear me say, but it's absolutely true. And we cannot let our eye off the ball. And what's going to be perverse about it in the next few years is it's down to very small numbers. So we think there's 120 people with undiagnosed HIV here in Brighton. There's just 4,400 in England and about 5,100 UK-wide. We're down to very small numbers. So every year it costs us more to find the next person with undiagnosed HIV. And we need all of you to support us to make sure the government spend that bit of money to find that next person. Because the return on investment is getting worse every year. But by the end of the decade, the return on investment could be not only the huge finance of not having new treatments and a new diagnosis, what that means, but the liberation for many people. But alongside that, we have a duty to make sure we're here till the last person living with HIV needs us. Just because we stop transmissions doesn't mean people won't live with HIV for a long time. I shared a stage with somebody who's 21. I'm hoping they have got 80, 90 years of living with HIV to go. We all hope for a cure that may come, but people living with HIV aren't necessarily holding out for that. And crucially, we know we can end the transmissions without it. We've got to support living with people living with HIV throughout it. And the challenge will come is that, you know, if with 105,000 people living with HIV, they collectively share the burden of HIV shame, which we've got to remove. The danger is if the community is dwindling because we have no new cases and people die of natural causes, that a smaller and smaller group of people will feel that HIV stigma. We've got to be there with them to fight it. And the solidarity that was talked about earlier in the queer community that has been there for people living with HIV is only going to get more important. As people age with HIV, the fear of going to a care home, losing control of your medication, having to come out again, being desexualized, and all the things that go with that experience is something that many people are fearful of. So we're here for that whole lifetime of that HIV journey, from prevention to good treatment, through just living well and going about your life. So there's still lots to do, and we haven't touched on the sexual health element, although I've obviously spoken about it throughout this. But for those of you who do support us, we really appreciate it. For those who don't, we would still appreciate your support. And sharing that message, more importantly, that people on effective treatment can't pass it on, is the most effective thing you can do.
That's incredible. Like, the work that you guys do is amazing, just how much things have evolved over such a short period of time. So round of applause, I think, that deserves anything. Okay, so I think we're going to take a little break and then we'll come back for an audience Q&A. So thank you very much to all my guests.
The conversation doesn't stop here. Check out the next part of this podcast episode on your streaming platform. You will not be disappointed. I really hope you enjoyed the show. A big thank you once again to all my guests. Please share the podcast, give it a 5-star review if you'd like, and leave any comments you may have. You can also follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for all the latest updates on Queer I Am, the podcast. Also, check out my website, www.fluiactually.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.